episode 30 of Welcome to Level 7. Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., starring David Hasselhoff.
Welcome to Level 7, the podcast about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Welcome to Level 7, the unofficial Nick Fury Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. podcast. I am Ben Avery. I am a comic book writer, Marvel comic fan, Marvel comic reader, Marvel Cinematic Universe fan, and I am joined by yet another Marvel comic fan, Marvel comic reader, Marvel comic Cinematic Universe fan, and also Disney blogger, and that would be
Daniel Butcher.
And we are here to talk about Nick Fury.
Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Starring David Hasselhoff. Sandra Hess. And let's see who else we have here.
Dude, you're like burying the lead here with Lisa Rinna.
Lisa Rinna. I
mean, she was huge. She was huge back then.
I think this was right on the cusp of her becoming that household name. Because wasn't this before Melrose Place, or is this during Melrose Place?
I think it's in that period where she's like transitioning away from the soap opera and onto network TV at night.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, no, she started Melrose Place in 96. She quit Melrose Place. She was in it from 96 to 97. This movie came out in 98. Wow. Okay. Well, there we have it. We have two soap opera stars in this movie. The two leads, David Hasselhoff and Lisa Rinna. I think, first of all, dear listeners, this is our Christmas gift to you. We are recording this during the Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. hiatus. We've been wanting to do this since before we recorded episode 1, and we've been holding on to it, trying to decide when is going to be the time. It's time.
Oh, it is so time. It is past time. We've been talking about this forever. Forever.
So here we are. We did record an episode after the hiatus started with the Netflix episode. We're recording this right now. We might even do another one before we come back for the second half of season 1. But this is
honest, we just haven't decided.
We haven't, and we'll talk about it after Christmas. But this is our Christmas gift to you, dear listeners, for sticking with us, for hanging out with us, for talking with us.
but it's honestly, it's a movie that we have wanted to discuss forever.
Yeah, no, and I think it might have even been in one of the early, like, first or second emails as we were talking about, well, what can we do? What can we talk about? We thought about maybe doing it during the summer, but we didn't need to because there are so many Marvel movies to talk about.
No, we kind of just cranked through the summer and barely got done everything we wanted
to do.
That's
right.
So.
And so here we are. I don't even know where to start here. We're not going to do news. There's been a lot of news that's come out, but we're not doing news for this episode. We aren't doing listener feedback for this episode because we didn't ask for any. Honestly, forgot to. I'm sure that if there are people who are familiar with this after listening, there will probably be some people who send us some feedback. But
we do feel a little bad because there's a ton of news out there right now. There honestly is.
Yeah, yeah. We have confirmation on a bunch of casting news, like Ant-Man's been cast. Groot, it's official. He's been cast.
About time.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. I mean, the only good thing, though, Daniel, is some of this news that we're talking about, it's things we were just waiting for them to say, yeah, it's really happening.
So, that's what we've been waiting for.
But we kind of suspected, and everyone else was suspecting, and I actually even read one place where they're like, I didn't realize this was news. I thought this had already happened. So
we do need to talk about something important.
What's that?
where has Daniel been the last few days? Because I haven't been talking to you at all.
We've been on radio silence. I just figured you were mad at me and, you know, being all passive aggressive.
It's time for me to reveal to you where I was. Some people, when it comes to the holiday season, they go out and they look for Santa Claus. Me, I look for Avengers.
Okay.
That's right. I've broken the seal.
So, okay, you sent me this picture here, huh?
Yeah.
What's it say? Can you read that for me?
It says, who's the hot mess now?
Yeah, I'm just going to be like Sherlock Holmes. Some people think he was illiterate because he would always ask Dr. Watson to read the letter for him.
There you go.
All right, yeah, so we got a picture here of... I'm assuming this is Daniel Butcher at the Great Lakes.
It is!
Yes.
I have finally gone to a Great Lake.
Nice. So this is Lake Superior off the coast of Minnesota?
Yeah, I went to Duluth.
Nice.
So I can no longer say, and I do understand why you are so interested in seeing them get avenged.
I don't really care about the lakes themselves.
It was lovely.
It's the states around the lakes that I care about.
Yeah. There you go.
It's the region. Daniel, I just I want you to know that while we're talking, I have this playing over on my laptop here, and it just showed a title card that says the Yukon. There's a camera sweeping down. It says "Keep out, yes. No admittance." Yes. And then there's a sign that says "Read this" with a it's hand painted with a red arrow pointing down. It says, "You better have a damn good reason for knocking on this door." It says. This is our introduction to Nick Fury. We need to talk about this movie now, all right, Daniel.
Let's bring into our mission report. Let's do it.
Let's just go ahead and get into it.
But before we go to the mission report, I think it's safe to say we're going to spoil this whole thing.
Yes. We're going to
We're going to tell you who lives, who dies, who falls in love.
Who falls in lust. I don't
We're going to tell you Daniel's one mistake that drives him crazy about this movie.
He has one problem. Okay.
One problem.
But we're not going to say what it is right now because that would spoil.
No, it would spoil.
It would spoil not just the plot, but also the Daniel's opinion. So, all right. Let's do it then.
Mission report.
All right. So, Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., starring David Hasselhoff. Daniel, let's introduce this to our listening audience if they're not familiar with it, shall we?
Let's do that.
Let's do it.
It's May 1998, a time in which if you wanted to watch something, you just didn't hit record on a DVR, but you had to actually set up a VCR, not by the name of your program, but by the channel and time. And if you messed it up by saying record channel 5 instead of 6, you may never see the show you were looking for. There was no Netflix, no Hulu. So for some of you, one shot was all you got at this masterpiece.
That's all I had, and I caught part of it.
You only caught part of it?
I did. I only caught part of it. I can't remember why, if I had to leave or what. And then I caught part of it later. It was a rerun on late night television during some late night movies. And again, caught part of it. Like 5 minutes of it, and then had to leave. Maybe I went to bed or something. I don't know.
How could you go to bed?
I don't know. But I'll tell you, the first time I actually watched through this whole movie, it was when I bought the DVD. Because we were doing this podcast.
So at this time, we're probably even, because it sounds like we've probably, at this point, both seen it twice. Because I did see it in 1998, because I did set the VCR.
I have seen it 3 times in full, and I'm watching it a 4th right now as we talk.
Yeah. So, well, and yeah. I was pretty excited. I was really, really, really excited because of the fact that, you know, we were having a comic book movie on television. I loved Marvel stuff. 98 is about a time where I started picking up some Marvel comic books again. I was reading a few X-Men comics here and there. So I was really, 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 really excited. And we didn't even know it back then, but for heaven's sakes, it was written by one of the guys who wrote Man of Steel.
Yeah, yeah. It was also written by someone who wrote Demonic Toys. But to be fair to him, 1998, he had written Dark City, a movie I really, really, really liked. Really liked that movie. I don't know if I still do, because I haven't watched it in a long time. He wrote Blade, which is what they were touting him. I remember them talking about how this is the guy who wrote Blade, who wrote this Nick Fury movie. And then he went on to write Blade 2 and Batman Begins and Ghost Rider, Spirit of Vengeance, Man of Steel.
Well, and you look at this and you're thinking to yourself, hey, Avi Arad, producer, and you look at some of his credits here. I mean, he did pretty good with, you know, X-Men and Spider-Man, and I'm trying to pull another one. Iron Man. I mean, he's a producer on Iron Man. I mean, he's got some nice credits here. But then let's be honest, he also has, well,
Ghost Rider.
Ghost Rider, Elektra, Bratz, the movie.
Anything Marvel.
Yeah. I mean, he's been the man. And this honestly is one of his early ones. So this is where he would have been breaking his teeth, per se, on this material and figuring out how to get it in live screen.
Yeah, I think most of what he had done before then, as far as Marvel went, was cartoon TV series.
Yep.
And it would have been, yeah, this was, looking at his IMDb right now, this was 98, Nick Fury, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And then you have Blade. Then you have Mutant X, the TV series, Blade 2, Spider-Man, Daredevil, X2, Hulk. X-Men was 2000. I mean, X-Men in 2000 was the breaking year for superhero stuff.
So if you think about it, this really was a key movie, because folks who are doing superhero movies today and creating the renaissance of superhero movies really started here and broke their teeth in live action.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, I mean, we can look at this as a kind of a precursor, kind of a transition between the Marvel of TV with cartoons and Bill Bixby and all that kind of thing to the Marvel of, you know, live action cinema. Not that this is cinema, but
no. Now this wasn't something that was released out in the US market as a theater release. This was originally played on TV on Fox. And I think there's a good reason why that was done here in the U.S. But to be honest, this could have been our first version of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. But instead of having a team headed by an agent who's level 8, you would have gone straight to the top with Nick Fury potentially.
Right. And I really do wonder – I've now heard people say it wasn't meant to be a TV series.
No.
It was meant to be a series of movies on TV. But either way, they were looking at creating some sort of television franchise. I'm positive for that, because you don't bring in the Hoff if you're just going to do a one-off, man. The Hoff does not equal one-off. That's all I'm going to say.
So I want you to think about this one, Ben.
I'm thinking.
Did you know this was not released on DVD until September 30th, 2008?
I did. I didn't know the exact date, but do you want to know why I knew that? Because right on the front, it says, from one of the writers of Batman Begins. And what year was Batman Begins? 2001, 2002, something like that.
Well, here's what I'm thinking. a little movie was released about 3 months earlier in May of that year. And I'm thinking that may have triggered Marvel's desire to make some quick cash off this little dandy.
Oh, it may have. And Best Buy. I mean, straight to Best Buy. It didn't go anywhere else. So, I don't know.
I'm just thinking there was a wave thanks to Mr. Tony Stark.
And the appearance of Samuel L. Jackson at the end of Iron Man. You want to see more adventures of Nick Fury?
Here they are.
It's confusing if you think they're the same guy, but you know what? Here it is. So we get this DVD. It is bare bones. Have we looked on Amazon lately to see how much it actually costs?
Last time I saw it was looking for, at about $99, and that a used copy was in the 50s.
So for that, you're getting a bare bones DVD that gives you nothing. It gives you the movie. It does have English subtitles, so that's good. I think there's a trailer, yeah.
Worst trailer ever.
Would you say
well,
that?
Well, no, or the best trailer ever, depending on whether or not you want to know the entire movie. Because when you watch the trailer, it's beat for beat every part of the plot. So it tells it to you all. And I don't quite get this. My daughter asked if it was bloopers.
What?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, she wanted to know if the trailer was bloopers.
That's weird.
I maybe it was just edited improperly. Huh. But she thought it was funny.
Okay. So, should we give a little bit of a plot synopsis? Or, I mean, we got the background here. They bring in David Hasselhoff to play Nick Fury.
And let's pause. I think what you said is very important. They brought in David Hasselhoff to play Nick Fury. This was not a joke, David Hasselhoff. This was the David Hasselhoff that was a moneymaker. This is Baywatch David Hasselhoff.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not. This is them very much wanting this to succeed, and theoretically bringing in a big TV star because he was a big TV star who could get TVs to turn on in the house.
Yeah, he was a household name, and not for being a drunk yet. Germans loved him for his music. I mean, you're bringing in a guy who anyone watching TV at this point has an opinion about David Hasselhoff. You might like him, you might hate him, but you know who he is.
Yeah, he's household name.
Yeah.
So it begins.
So I don't find I'm watching and it starts out and you know I'm thinking David Hasselhoff, I'm thinking Knight Rider and Baywatch, right? And what mm-hmm. happens? We start out with the camera soaring, speeding over water. And some kind of drum music going on. And I'm thinking, wait a minute. Did I accidentally somehow buy Baywatch? Because this just feels like the opening of a Baywatch. Water, water, water. But we're not on the beach, man.
No, and Hasselhoff's nowhere to be seen. No red swimsuit, no red floaty.
No.
He's not here.
No.
As the bad guys attack poor little Trinity base.
Okay. So are we going to go through this by plot, or are we going to go through this? I don't.
You know us. We're going to jump in and out.
Okay, so.
So let's get this movie started with the attack on Trinity Base.
All right.
The cryogenic. Holding place. What would we call that? I guess we'd call that freezer. The freezer.
Okay.
In our little show. We get attacked by Hydra. And we meet our first Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes. Daniel, I have
a fan favorite.
I have to admit something to you. There are a couple things that this movie does that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. does not do. This thing did right. One of them is they bring in characters. We are introduced right away to... Go ahead. Who is it?
Agent Clay Quartermain.
Quartermain.
Who we've, you know, people would love to see him on Tuesday nights.
Yeah. Well, fans of the show anyway. Yeah.
But let's be honest. As Hydra steals Von Strucker's body from Trinity Base, did they treat Clay Quartermain right?
Oh, I'm not like in love with the character of Clay Quartermain, but they gave him a great scene.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. They shoot him in the gut. Immediately, and he's down. They're going to steal that body. They're going to get that body that, you know, is the frozen body of a dying, you know, Hydra leader, or dead Hydra leader, or at least he's frozen anyway. Quartermain goes down, but he gets back up again, and he takes on all of Hydra
Of course he would. He's Nick Fury's right hand.
They're coming. He's going. Oh, my goodness. They're gassing everyone, but he's still, you know, he's going for it.
He's the Energizer Bunny of S.H.I.E.L.D.
He has a couple dying lines. You think he's died. One of them is, and this is just his character. This is just telling you who he is. Ours is not the reason why. Ours is but to do in. And he's going to fight them. And I'm sorry if I'm just taking your lines here, Daniel, but he's going to fight them. He says, let us rock.
Rock.
And let us roll.
And that's the thing about this movie. The dialogue in this movie is top notch for what they're shooting for. It is top notch.
So Quartermain, he goes down, but you know, he's a Coulson. He's the Coulson of this little thing, because he's the one who gets Nick Fury to actually want to come back into action. Because where is he? Oh, go ahead.
Well, I think it's funny that you say he's Coulson, because Quartermain is somebody who's been killed in the comics and then came back as an LLMD.
Okay.
And as we watch on Tuesday nights, Coulson's struggle with, you know, Tahiti's a magical place. And Nick Fury versus S.H.I.E.L.D., Quartermain has the same struggle as an LMD.
Ah, cool.
Why do my memories only go this start here? Why do I feel this way about that? Clay Quartermain's looking into himself in the same sort of way in the comics that Coulson does on Tuesday nights. So poor Agent Quartermain's dead.
Yeah.
First 6-7 minutes of the movie. A legend gone. We leave Trinity Base.
And the stakes are high, man. We know, because they just killed Quartermain. It could be anyone next. Anyone. So they've just gotten the body of
Baron von Strucker. Who will, of course, we're hearing rumors of going to be in Avengers Age of Ultron.
Right. If we were doing news, we would have talked about that.
Yeah.
And he's a classic World War II Hydra villain.
Well, and he's a classic Nick Fury nemesis.
Okay.
I mean, he really is. He's, if you were to take his pantheon, his rogues gallery, Von Strucker is always going to be in there.
All right. He had done some bad stuff, and Fury put him on ice. And now Fury is himself on ice as we move to the Yukon, as I teased earlier, where I want to say this again. His sign, it's up on a mine, all right? He's in the Yukon. He has a sign on the mine that says, you better have a damn good reason for knocking on this door. There's not much of a door there to knock on, to be fair. All right, so maybe it's just a warning that if you knock on this door, it could just fall right off, so please have a good reason. But I don't think please is a part of any part of Nick Fury's language here. And we're in the Yukon, where Nick Fury is doing what? He's mining?
He's mining. He's like he's the eighth dwarf.
What's going on here?
Nick Fury's been mining. I mean, that's what you do. You change from being a master spy to a master dwarf. And as the eighth dwarf, his name is either Smokey or
Patchy.
Surly the dwarf.
Surly, Smokey, or Patchy. I just want to throw that in there because he does not have that one eye.
Yeah, so this is the life that Nick Fury is leading when S.H.I.E.L.D. comes to find him, comes to bring him off ice.
It's classic. It's classic. You got to come back. We need you. You got to come back and join the band.
He's the hero in the wilderness with a pickaxe.
Yeah, we are starting this character in the middle of his journey. He has done all the fighting he plans to do. And he just wants to be left alone where he can mine and dig.
And be alone.
He's in a mine that's old. You know, this is an old mine, but he's just there, living there.
It doesn't, well, and he's
chipping away with
there.
Pickaxe. What is he like, doing? Oh. And who else do they have to bring to get him to come? The Contessa.
a Contessa.
She comes in one of those, you know, those jet planes with the turning wings that you can.
It's like a Harrier, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a Harrier jump jet is what I think it is. Again, I haven't seen this for about 2-3 months, so. They come, they pick him up, and they take him to the helicarrier to tell him what the problem is. And in that process, you know, he gets mad. He literally shakes his fist at the air and yells at them, "Why don't you take your blow dryer and get out of my afternoon sun?"
They come, they want him, and he says, "Well, unfortunately, Pyrrhus, you're going to have to tell S.H.I.E.L.D. to shove it up their collective end zones."
So we know sports that metaphors is a football fan.
Apparently. I mean, he's out there, you know, digging his mind, watching football, I guess. It's Alaska. It's possible he's watching Canadian football. I don't know. But
oh, man. So basically, he does come out of the Yukon.
Well, of course he does. Or there'd be no movie.
And they bring him to the helicarrier where they tell him what the problem is. And we're not going to talk about what the problem is for a while, other than the fact that poor Agent Quartermain's dead. Because what we do get between them picking him up in the Yukon and him hearing the problem is a carousel of characters as we look at a bunch of folks that will impact Nick Fury's future adventures.
So we have the Contessa, who has a past with Nick Fury. They were once in love.
We have Alexander Goodwin Pierce.
Yes, the English agent.
Who we will wind up seeing in the future in the MCU. We have Kate Neville.
Kate Neville, the psychic.
Commander Tim Dugan.
Dum-Dum Dugan from the Howling Commando days.
Gabriel Jones.
Gabe, also known as Gabe, also from the Howling Commando days.
Now, all these names are classic S.H.I.E.L.D. names. And then finally we get to Director General Jack Pinsir.
Pinsir, who's... Is he a Marvel character or not?
Pinsed. You know, when I looked him up earlier, this is the only reference that I've been able to find.
Okay. He's basically the suit, you know, who's just there to bust Nick Fury's chops.
And there's busting.
And Nick Fury's there to bust him.
let's just talk through our characters, because we've met them all now. So let's start with Nick Fury. So we've established that he is surly.
Yes.
He is grumpy.
Very grumpy.
He's got some past history with the Contessa.
And he's got a cigar that he is chomping on.
He's smoking cigar in places he should not be smoking, even in 1998.
Yeah. I mean, there's signs up and everything.
So he's not a rule follower.
Not at all.
So what else do we know about Nick Fury? We know that he has been used up.
Mm-hmm. He does not want to go back.
He does not want to go back to S.H.I.E.L.D. at all, because for S.H.I.E.L.D., they rejected him. Basically, the kind of what they set up is that in the Cold War, he was the master spy, and he could fight the guys like Von Strucker. But he didn't have rules. He was able to just act because you were in that time of the Cold War.
Right.
Where when the Cold War done, he was no longer needed as far as the super spy. And instead what you needed was a bureaucrat like Pinsir. So they're actually kind of – they're two different sides of the S.H.I.E.L.D. coin, you know, the soldier and the bureaucrat.
Right.
And there was a long time when Fury was needed – as the soldier, but now that they're in a quote-unquote time of peace on their helicarrier, they need Pinsir.
Yeah. And if they needed Pinsir, I mean, they get what they deserve, I guess, because Pinsir, man, that guy, oh. They set him up as the cliche. This is the other thing you're going to see a lot in this movie. There's a lot of cliche. You got the cliche bureaucrat. You got the cliche lines. You got the cliche. Well, we'll get into some of the villainous cliches we got here, but okay. So Pierce and Pinsir.
We're not done with Nick Fury yet.
Oh, sorry.
Did you know that this right here is the ultimate Nick Fury with a little U?
I have heard it said that David Hasselhoff was the ultimate Nick Fury. I heard it said by David Hasselhoff, right?
He has reason. So let me read you the quote.
Okay.
Stan Lee put me in that. He gave me the best line ever. Guys like you tend to cling to the bowl no matter how many times you flush.
Again, that's Pinsir.
Stan Lee came on the set and told me all about Nick. He said, "You're the ultimate Nick Fury." He gave me the greatest compliment ever. So this is this year. Hasselhoff is still going around in the days of Samuel L. Jackson and saying he is Nick Fury.
Well, and he was actually responding to questions about Samuel L. Jackson, saying, you know, I was the first Nick Fury, that Samuel Jackson wasn't actually Nick Fury.
Let's pause. It's fair to say that there's a good chance Samuel L. Jackson didn't see this.
Oh, no. Okay. I've heard Samuel Jackson talking about it, too.
Okay.
He said something to the effect of, I watched it and I wasn't going to play it like that ever, basically.
Well, and I will say this. Hasselhoff really is playing the comic book Caucasian Nick Fury, because this, you know, that is the growly, snarly, patchy, keeps his cards close to his vest Nick Fury.
Yeah.
Which there's parts of that in Samuel L. Jackson's depiction, but, you know, that Nick Fury gets to wear cool clothes. So, and I'm going to throw in, oh, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that as far as the way he plays Nick Fury, he plays Nick Fury the way I see the World War II Sergeant Fury.
Absolutely.
I mean, it's just that gruff, I'm not going to take any crap from anyone. I'm going to do what I have to get this job done. And unless you fire me, and then I'm just going to go off into the Yukon and hide away.
A dig for gold.
What is he digging for?
I don't know.
Why is he there? I don't understand.
So do you want to know what Hasselhoff has to say about Samuel L. Jackson's Nick Fury?
Sure.
You know, it wasn't Nick Fury. They take these shows and they make it the way they want to make it. And unfortunately, they should have had Stan Lee on the set and let him kick him into gear. Whoever directed decided they wanted to go that way. But it's their prerogative. He's still a great actor. So, not Nick Fury. Not good, huh?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so, I mean, we're going to be talking about Nick Fury this entire time. So let's start talking about some of these other characters and kind of introduce them.
Let's do the Contessa.
All right.
Okay, so I'm going to give you a summary of the Contessa from Nick Fury's lips. Val's an old hand at this espionage game.
At the what?
Sexpionage game.
Can I give you their backstory?
Absolutely, sir.
Given to us by both of them. Okay. The Contessa says to Nick, as they're arguing about what happened in the past, "I got scared. I walked." "Yeah, into someone else's bed." "Well, I learned that move from you."
Burn.
That's it in a nutshell. That's all we need to know about their past, because, man.
And it's clear. It is clear that they still have feelings for each other. I mean, let's be honest.
Oh, yeah. And
even though at one point, you know, Hasselhoff's tongue will be down somebody else's mouth.
But
he still,
you know,
feels for
there's there. He has every excuse for that. Right?
Yeah.
He's kind of drugged. You know, she uses that kiss to infect him with a terrible disease. I mean, yeah. Every excuse. So the Contessa, she's, this is Lisa Rinna.
Yep.
And this is, you know, she's our female lead. She can hold her own. She goes off. She gets her own subplot where when the team splits up, Nick Fury and his rogues go one way and she goes another way. She gets her own team where she's leading her own part of the mission. And it's a strong character. But again, it's the cliche, you know, he comes back, they have the past and they're going to have to get over their past. So,
well, and the thing about her is when you think about the fact that Nick Fury was used up and thrown away, Val's not.
No,
She was able to be diplomatic enough to survive in a post-Cold World environment. And she's still a highly skilled S.H.I.E.L.D. agent, a spy. I'm assuming she's been trained quite a bit by Nick. But again, the fact that she's more diplomatic, you know. Pinsir has use for her.
Yeah.
And I will say, again, this is another classic S.H.I.E.L.D. character. I love seeing her show up. She's the love interest throughout many S.H.I.E.L.D. comic books for Nick Fury. And in the last year with Wolverine and Nick Fury Jr., in the Wolverine title, there's a great scene in the bar. I like to call it the bar bunch in the reviews that I've written, where there's like this wall of spies and heroes, and her picture is up on the wall. And Nick Fury Jr. Oh, cool. Looks at it for a while.
That's cool.
Yep. So great classic Marvel S.H.I.E.L.D. character here.
So then we have... Oh, and this is a character we're probably not going to see, I'm guessing, in the MCU. Because I think of the way she is... She's a part of Nick Fury's story.
Well, that's the thing. We're not going to see her on Tuesday nights. If we ever saw her, it'd have to be in a Nick Fury movie.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
and when they've talked in the past of doing the young Nick Fury one-shot sort of movie, you know, maybe you could bring Val into that because you could set up something when he was younger probably, you know, set up that baggage early. But again, it's not like Samuel L. Jackson, as far as we know yet, is going to do his own Nick Fury standalone. So
they could. It would work.
They could. They really could.
It really would. But yeah. Okay, so should we talk about Pierce a little bit?
Yeah, Pierce, this is an interesting one.
It's interesting because he's in the upcoming Captain America movie, right?
It is. And the thing about the upcoming Captain America movie is this Pierce and that Pierce are clearly two different guys.
No. This guy is raw. He's fairly new. And of course, since he's got a British accent, you know, he's smart, but he's not going to be able to hold his own physically against the bad guys. You know, not...
And they even make some
not
jokes
right away,
about
anyway.
Yeah, they even make some jokes about the fact that he's inept at times.
Yeah.
Where I don't get the sense that Robert Bradford is going to come off as inept.
No. He's the one that they send in first, though, to get Nick Fury. And so he's the one who actually has to knock on that door. And he's the one that we get an image of who Nick Fury is, because as Pierce comes up to him, Nick Fury just pops him one. He's the kind of guy who he punches first and asks questions second. And Pierce goes down. And he's the one who has to try and convince Nick Fury. It's just not working until, of course, the Contessa makes her appearance. But what else do we know about Pierce? He's a comic book character.
He's a comic book character. And I'll be honest, Robert Redford is not how Pierce has been portrayed in the past. This guy, sorry for forgetting your name real quick, Neil Roberts, he is much closer to the comic book version of Pierce in the sense of being inept, being a little bit of a joke, being young.
Mm-hmm.
In Nick Fury versus S.H.I.E.L.D., where you see a lot of Pierce, he is seen as being an overweight, inept agent, and no one can believe that he has aligned himself with Nick Fury. Because why would Nick Fury ever pick this guy? Because he's the quote-unquote worthless guy you can find in S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah. And but obviously, so with his one eye, he sees something good in that guy.
Well, and to be honest, and I think you can see it here too, it's loyalty. I mean, he sticks to the job. He's persistent. He's loyal. He follows Nick Fury into heck.
Yeah.
And as he will do here as part of Nick Fury's Rogues.
Which we'll get to why he has a little band of rogues, you know, in a little bit here. But is it just me or were you reminded a little bit of Hugh Grant?
A little bit. You know, I'm kind of reminded of Ward in Sky because I think they set Pierce up as being the in character for the audience in many ways.
I could see that. I could see that.
Because they do bring him up as being relatively new to S.H.I.E.L.D.
Mm-hmm.
But unlike our Ward, he's definitely not the action hero.
No. No. He's not bad. He does have training. That's the one thing you got to give him. He's trained. He knows how to do things. But he doesn't have any experience. Or very little experience. So. All right. Let's move on to Kate. Kate Neville.
Well, do we really need to talk about her?
Well, she does play a part in here.
Yeah, but if we've learned anything from Agent Coulson is that psychics are just a myth. So...
Well, in this version of our Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. universe, she's a psychic. She's part of their psychic division. And she's good at what she does. And what she does isn't very pretty. Because I don't know. I couldn't help thinking of Star Trek VI, where Spock mind melds against Valeris's will. She does not want to be mind-melded against, but he goes ahead and does it anyway and kind of violates her. And I kind of get that impression with Kate here. When she's pulling information from people's heads, it's not a pleasant experience for anyone. But she's there, and they use her, and she's a part of the plot, and she gets used in the plot. It's really some part of the climax that we'll get to. It's kind of weak, but we'll get to that.
Well, and I will say, so in Marvel Comics, traditionally, S.H.I.E.L.D. has had a heavy psychic psychic tool in PSYOPs, which we've kind of talked about before. You think of S.H.I.E.L.D. agents like Network Nina, who's in fact a psychic. Now, in the comics, Agent Neville is not a psychic. She'd be much more closer to what we see from Val here in What is this thing again? Nick Fury,
Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. But you got to say it like you have a cigar in your mouth. Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. It's much, much closer to what we see from the Contessa. But again, you know, psychics have had a huge impact in the past history. I mean, even in Secret Avengers, Maria Hill has used psychics to do something that I find is a huge violation of superheroes. So S.H.I.E.L.D. has never had a problem messing with folks' minds and has always trained folks to do it. And Kate Neville is a great example of it.
Yeah. Who else do we have here to talk about then?
Oh, I want to throw in one more thing about Kate. So with Kate, I've read less about her, but in Nick Fury, Agent of S.H.I.E.L.D., she's shacking up with Nick Fury. And I believe it's in Alaska.
Interesting. Now, he hasn't met her before in the movie.
No.
So that's not who they were talking about with the whole you walk into someone else's bed and she says, yeah, I learned that from you. That's not what they're talking about. She's a young agent. And she would have been a great supporting cast member, I think, had they been able to go to some kind of series with this. But all right. So that's Kate Neville, played by, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and look it up here. Played by Tracy Waterhouse. Never heard of her. But I liked her in this movie. So
Gary Chalk.
Gary Chalk. Who's Gary Chalk?
He's got a lot of credits.
Oh, that's Dum Dum Dugan.
Yeah. Ooh, he's been in Spider-Man Unlimited as additional voices. Very nice. Right.
So let's talk about Dum Dum.
I'm furious.
You're furious?
I am completely and utterly – this is – the only mistake that these filmmakers have made is their handling of Dum Dum Dugan.
And I'm
it's outrageous.
Is this because he's not wearing a bowler cap?
There's no bowler cap.
Okay.
Where's the mustache, man?
He shaved it off.
What? Dum Dum Dugan does not shave off his mustache.
Dum Dum Dugan is a desk jockey.
Yeah. In fact, I don't believe they even, other than one time, call him Dum Dum. I think they call him for most of the movie. Are you ready for this?
Go for it.
Timothy?
Because it's the guy's name.
No, he's Dum Dum Dugan. This is outrageous.
Outrageous?
I've considered... I've considered not even watching any other David Goyer written movies because of the way he's written bureaucrat Timothy Dugan. It's a complete and utter sham.
No, I will go to the mat on this decision because you know what? Nick Fury needed someone who was behind the desk, who was right there.
You could have made someone else up.
You could have, but why? This is our question about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in general, the TV show. Why make people up when you don't need to?
You don't need to. Are you ready? You ready? Are you sitting down?
Yes, I am.
Jasper Sitwell.
Okay.
He was already in Marvel Comics, and that was the role he had, was as a desk jockey.
Sorry, man. I love my Dum Dum Dugan. I love
this
him
is,
from...
This is upsetting.
This is your hill that you're going to die on here.
This is.
This is the one.
I've never promised to be rational.
Everything else in here.
Makes complete sense to me for what they're trying to do. I mean, I smiled.
They're giving you... basically, they're giving you characters at this point where they're saying, we've got this guy. Who can we pull on from the cast of characters that Nick Fury works with? And so, well, we need the guy who's going to be his ally behind a desk. Well, let's get him, Dum Dum Dugan. He's one of the first names that's probably on the list of extra characters to pull from.
I just got sick in my mouth when you said that.
Oh, man.
Oh, all right. Can we talk about Gabe Jones?
Let's talk about Gabe Jones.
See,
he doesn't have a trumpet. He never plays his trumpet.
He never does.
Oh, throw this movie away, even though we did not spend $100 on this movie, by the way. I just want to throw this out there. We did spend money on this through eBay. We did not spend $99. On this movie. We did not come anywhere close to that, just for the record.
Now, Gabe Jones, I'm trying to get you back on track here. Gabe Jones, who we have seen in Captain America the First Avenger.
Yeah. Well, we saw Dum Dum Dugan, too, and he was awesome.
Yeah. He was fantastic. He was exactly the way he was supposed to be. It's just like Flint with his beret in G.I. Joe. He's got to have his beret. Now, Gabe Jones here, he's been twisted a little bit, too, because he's not a field agent here. He's a scientist.
Yes.
So, I mean, basically what they've done is they've taken the name Gabe Jones and the idea that he's a close and loyal friend of Nick Fury's and combined him with another S.H.I.E.L.D. character of the gaffer, Sidney Levine, who's a S.H.I.E.L.D. scientist. So I don't know why I'm not as upset about the fact that Gabe Jones has been changed, but I am very, very upset over Dum Dum Dugan.
And he's played by Ron Canada. Who I've seen him in 1,000 different things, and or maybe not 1,000, but you get the idea. Every time I see him, I love that guy's name, Ron Canada. He sounds like a superhero himself. I am Captain Ontario, otherwise known as Ron Canada. But okay, so Gabe Jones, he's the scientist who's on Nick's side. He's there doing his job for S.H.I.E.L.D. Again, like you just said, they needed someone to fill that role. They gave him that name. I'm okay with it. And you are too. So since you're not rational, but you're honest, I can accept that. So where do we go from there?
Well, and then last but not least, we do have Pinsir.
Pinsir, who knew for this movie here, as far as we can tell.
And I'm going to mispronounce this gentleman's name, Tom McBeath, who's another face that you would see in tons of stuff. Because he's a character actor who's been in many, many things. So he's got 153 credits.
Yeah. I mean, these are people that they're getting, for the background characters at least, they're recognizable names and they're recognizable faces. They're easy, familiar faces. And that's That's a good thing.
Absolutely.
So,
and again, he's a stock character. He truly is. He's the stock bureaucrat. In many ways, that's what all these guys are. They're the stock. They took the, yep, the character off the shelf and then they stuck a name on it.
The stock ally, the stock scientist, the stock
girlfriend.
Girlfriend, yeah. I mean, it's all. It's a. If there's one complaint I could give to this movie, there's a lot I could. But here's one, I guess. If there's one I could give, there's thousands I could give. And one of them is, they don't go out of their way to not be cliche. This is not what I'm recognizing from like the guy who wrote Batman Begins and The Dark Knight. Many people have problems with those movies, but cliche usually isn't one of them. So should we talk about the bad guys, though?
Talk about the problem, and then let's get into the bad guys.
Okay. So the problem is the Death's Head virus, which was eradicated. It was created by Von Strucker and was destroyed by S.H.I.E.L.D. There is no trace of it on the face of the Earth except for frozen in Von Strucker's body, right?
Dun, dun, dun.
Am I getting this right?
But only if we had a doctor who could extract it and weaponize it.
That's right. So they can... I'm not quite understanding why they kept his body. I might have missed that. I might have turned at the wrong moment or something.
Nick Fury clearly likes trophies.
Okay. But, yeah, I mean, here's a guy who clearly they wanted to kill. And here's a guy who has the only... I mean, this virus will destroy millions of lives in an instant. Or not quite an instant, but almost an instant. It takes a while for you to die. But there is no cure. You're going to die painfully.
It's not pleasant.
And we know it's not pleasant because we're going to talk about her in a minute, but Nick Fury has been infected by that deadly tongue. Or lips, anyway.
Well, okay. Well, you're going fast here.
Oh, I'm saying we're coming back to her.
Okay.
But we know it's not pleasant because the whole second half of this movie, Nick Fury is not only fighting bad guys, he's fighting the virus.
Dun, dun, dun.
Right. Okay, so.
So Nick Fury heads off to... Germany?
Is it Germany? I don't know.
He heads to Europe because there's the one doctor who could handle the Death's Head.
Yes.
Emil Zola. Sound familiar, kids? Daniel missed him once. He now walks around with a giant face in his tummy. That's right. Emil Zola.
That's right. Arnim Zola.
Oh, dang it.
Yeah.
Me and Zola just don't get along.
I thought you just maybe you were mispronouncing it.
No.
That's pretty extreme for even you, though. That would be a...
That was just pure mistake.
Okay. So we get Arnim Zola, another classic Hydra villain. And he's one who gets mind savaged by Kate Neville. And they find out the plan for the bad guys by going in and psychically pulling it from his head. And we have Von Strucker, who is on ice. And can we please talk about the main villain now?
Are you talking about... Well, no. We have please. To talk about Gail Runciker.
Okay, go
because
ahead.
Because she's another S.H.I.E.L.D. character. But here's the thing. So here they make her an Interpol agent instead of a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent. Yeah. And they made her blonde and German instead of brunette and American.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Fine. And then you're going to get all tense because you're like, Gail's acting funny. And why is Nick making out with her?
Mm-hmm.
And then she sticks her poisonous tongue.
I think it actually is lipstick.
It is lipstick? Okay.
Yeah, I think, but...
See, James Bond never has these problems.
Oh, he has them all the time. That's the thing. He always has those problems.
The poison lipstick problem.
I'm sure that there's poison lipstick somewhere in that, in some one James Bond movie somewhere has poison lipstick. But
because what we find out is that Gail Runciker is in fact
Viper
Von Strucker.
Viper Sandra Hess. If I had a villain crush, it is on this villain. Sandra Hess as Viper is so awesome.
So are you saying that she does a better job, Sandra Hess does a better job as Viper than the lady who played Viper in
1,000%,
The Wolverine?
1,000% better.
Wow.
1,500%. I won't go any higher than that because I don't want to, but Daniel, she is so perfect. We have Nick Fury chewing his cigar, and we have Sandra Hess chewing the scenery with just joyful glee. She is forced to do things in this movie as the villain that any normal actor would just be, how can I don't, I, she throws herself into this with reckless abandon. She laughs and she gives the villain laugh that you use when you cut to commercial, because we have to go to commercial. We need something to, you know, get people to be worried about, well, she is evil. So listen to that laugh. And she gives us the greatest laugh multiple times. I mean, the movie ends with her laugh, with her evil villain laugh. And she has terrible, ridiculous villain lines, cliche. In my notes, I wrote in all caps, this chick is awesome. She's got all the toys because she's in charge now, because her father was in charge before and she's inherited Hydra. She does the cliche kill. Like, I'm such a bad, evil villain that I'm going to kill one of my own people.
But relatively bloodlessly, because of the fact we are on network television.
Right, but she has this gun that I'm not sure. This might be a real gun. If it is, it's very interesting. It has, from what I can tell, one trigger but four barrels. And every time you pull the trigger, it's like a Nerf gun. It just moves to the next barrel to shoot the bullet, right? And she shoots him four times. And as she's shooting, I mean, she's just, you know, she's aroused by this violence that she's...
She may not be the only one. Settle down, sir.
No, I'm just... I don't know anything about Sandra Hess. I'm not going to track down anything else she's done. I think she did like a Mortal Kombat movie or something like that. It's not like that for me here. This is me liking Viper the same way that I like the Hulk. This is me liking her as she's chewing the scenery. I am liking her in the same way I love Nick Nolte as Bruce Banner's father in the Hulk. Okay? Just crazy. All out crazy. I'm just going to let it all out. And I'm not even going to care. Only she's got, you know, with Nick Nolte, it's just me being Nick Nolte. You know, she's throwing herself into this part. And I'm just thinking to myself, this is perfect. This is the perfect villain for Nick Fury. This is cartoonish. But at the same time, yeah, I can't say enough about the performance she gives as this crazy, whacked out Hydra leader who's young. I mean, she's really young compared to like all the other Hydra people and all the bald albino people that she's got working for her. But yeah, there it is. You have anything to add about Viper?
No. I think you've had your love fest there.
Okay, thank you.
So I'm good.
Okay.
I mean, she is comic book villain.
Absolutely.
But brought to the big screen.
No, you want broad stuff right here. This is broad Batman 1966 level villainy. It's just that same kind of, she's cut from that same cloth, only she goes even, you know, 13 times crazier.
So let's talk about her brother for 15 seconds.
Okay, he's there.
His name is Foreigner.
Yeah.
He's not smart.
Not at all. And he's expendable as far as she's concerned.
Yes, because she's, and that shows you something about Viper. She's willing to kill her brother.
Yeah.
She doesn't care.
She loves her dad, though. But
she does. That's why she's got his frozen body in the middle of her living room.
Right, and we'll talk about that in a moment when we get toward the end here. But yeah, he's expendable. She doesn't care because this is cliche crazy villain that we're talking about here.
So we've gotten to, is this the third act now?
Oh, I, who knows?
It's the 18th act. So we've, here's our problems, kids. To recap, Hydra has the Death's Head virus weaponized and using it to hold New York City hostage. At the meantime, Nick Fury is poisoned and likely to die at any moment.
Right.
To sum it all up, in the words of Nick Fury himself, Hydra's been jerking us over jerking over our chain 6 ways to Sunday.
Oh.
Does that not sum it up?
It does. It does. We've
been jerking our chain 6 ways to Sunday.
Hydra's been jerking our chain 6 ways. I'm going to start using that, actually, 6 ways to Sunday. But yeah. So, and of course, they send in a robot pincer. And so you have the great cliched scene where Pincer is walking up to Nick Fury. Okay. And Nick Fury pulls his gun on Pincer and gets ready to shoot. Awesome. Pincer drops to the ground and Fury shoots the pincer behind Pincer, who's a robot. Bam, bam, bam. And then he opens his mouth and, you know, there's Viper giving them a message. He shoots the robot, by the way, with his gun horizontal, kind of gangster style, which I was kind of surprised. I didn't realize that actually worked.
He's old school, man.
It just seems awkward way to shoot, but I don't know anything. I haven't shot a handgun before, so. And someone has to do this mission now. They have two things they have to do. They have to track down the missiles that are going to shoot it, and they have to track down the control so they can find out, you know, how can they shut this down. And so Nick Fury, he goes against orders. He's going to do it. Gabe wants to stop him. And Gabe says, are you in any condition to do this? Of course not, Gabe, but who the hell else is going to do it? The LMD? Which, by the way, we have an LMD. They make an LMD of Nick Fury, okay? And let me see. It's reducible in size for easy transport.
So
don't forget that.
Can I fold it up and put it in my pocket?
Yes, because he sneaks it in when they go to fight the bad guys. It does not show up when they're searching him for weapons. He has two advantages against them. His eye underneath his patch is actually a bomb. And he has an LMD on his person.
So we've got our first eye bomb.
Yeah. So he has an LMD on his person that he actually somehow... I don't know how this... It all happens off camera. Because Nick Fury comes into the room, does a whole bunch of fighting, and then gets killed. And they're looking at his dead body, the bad guys are, and all of a sudden they hear whistling. And they look up, and there's Nick Fury, alive. No, they were fighting an LMD. Daniel, how much does that thing have to weigh?
3-4... No, probably 250.
Maybe, I mean, let's just assume. Let's just assume its body weight. I mean, it's probably heavier than that because it's metallic, right? I mean,
they showed
the exoskeleton or the endoskeleton. They show the skeleton, and they're putting skin over it. It's metal.
Hey.
It shrinks down to pocket size. He has a 300-pound pocket-sized doll somewhere on his person.
Technology can easily take care of mass. You know what I mean?
You can change size, but you can't change mass. If you've got all of that material in one spot. Okay.
But did you know what happens on scene? Why does Nick Fury have to go against Viper?
Why?
Because that blood.
Yes.
That blood will cure him. And I'll get that vampire's blood if I have to suck it from her neck.
Because she somehow has the cure inside her. But that's actually the second vampire joke we get. Because that when they're actually showing him the life model decoy. They say it has your memory M-grams and reflex tapes, which I don't know what reflex tapes are, but he says, I don't know whether to congratulate you or drive a stake through its heart.
Well, but that's the way, in the comic books, that's the way an LMD is. It is a copy of you.
Right, but the reflex
including your personality
tapes,
and your ability to act. And
they don't have, drives and you know, hard drives and stuff, but okay.
Well, this is 98 technology. I mean...
Which is supposed to be futuristic technology because it's S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, they're ahead of the curve. But
we have to make it believable for the people.
That's a minor detail, okay? He had a life model decoy in his pocket, okay? That's the one. But here's the other thing you have to remember. This is a world
I've
where...
Is that a live metal decoy in your pocket?
This is a world where if you hit the button, it might not work because it's not working. You know, it's malfunctioning. So if it's not working when you're touching the button with your finger, take out your gun and shoot the button. And that will make it work.
Well, that's going to dislodge it.
You know, in my world, I would assume it would destroy it, destroy the mechanism. But he did that once to shut a door, and then there was the elevator security thing.
They do that in Star Wars. Come on.
Star Wars is – they did that in the elevator where he couldn't submit to a retinal scan. And so security, which S.H.I.E.L.D. has terrible security, and this is just
the
proof.
The worst.
This is just proof. He can't get in. Security is going to kill everyone in the elevator because he can't submit to a retinal scan because he only has one eye. Is that it?
It does seem like overkill.
Yeah. So he just takes his gun and shoots it, shoots the panel. And the door's open and everything's fine. That would be like, that's the worst security ever. Okay. So let's move on then. Where should we go next?
You want to do New York real quick.
New York. Okay, so while Nick Fury is going off trying to find Viper and get the cure and some other stuff, and he gets captured, and that's where he, you know, they take away all his weapons except for his eye and the life model decoy and all that stuff. He's dealing with Hydra's base of operations. We also have the Contessa, who she is out, and she is tracking down the vehicle that's going to have the missiles in it that's going to be shot at Manhattan. So she's driving around. And again, this is just the kind of movie we're in, okay? If you don't like what we're talking about, you're not going to like this movie, okay? Because this is just the kind of movie we're in. They end up following a garbage truck. Now, this garbage truck is probably the most suspicious garbage truck in the world.
Ever?
Like, I can't imagine how this garbage truck is going anywhere without people just looking and staring. Because standing on the back of the garbage truck, dressed in appropriate garbage attire, I will give them that, are two bald albinos. All right, that apparently Hydra is that's who they're hiring these days. Driving the truck, you have Werner, who is, you know, your classic Eurotrash type cliche villain, where he's got the long hair and greasy hair, sharp dresser though. And driving the truck, driving the garbage truck, mind you, not in the coveralls, in a three-piece suit, is another bald albino. Who's?
And don't get me wrong. Again, I've never been to New York. Don't these albinos also carry submachine guns?
They do. You mean the guys hanging on the back?
Yeah, yeah.
I don't remember seeing if they had it while they were driving along the streets, but I'm just, again, thinking to myself, you know, you could have gone with something a little less conspicuous. Fortunately for them, everyone else in the entire city are idiots, and no one's seeing anything. But S.H.I.E.L.D. is following with their thermal imaging because you have to keep the temperature of the virus low. So, yeah. Okay.
So does Val find Werner?
She does. They do. And they have to it's a short battle, but they win. They have a short little battle with the albino Hydra agents. I keep thinking, first of all, of Dark City with the pasty-faced Nosferatu-type villains, and then also thinking about Fringe, even, with the ball. These guys... fortunately for them, after they did work here on Nick Fury, they were able to get jobs on Fringe as bald albinos. The makeup isn't...
They may have been typecast.
Yeah. There's not much more you could do other than bad guy if you're a... and the makeup isn't great, but it's... I mean, it's TV movie makeup, so... the one thing that they do... when they don't have the budget for the makeup, though, is they just put nylon stocking type things, masks over the heads of the guys who are, you know, the guys guarding the base. You can't put makeup on everyone to be, you know, pasty faced. So they just put a black mask over a bunch of their faces. And problem solved.
Yes, it is. The problem in New York is solved.
Okay, so...
But Nick Fury still out there poisoned, about to die.
That's right. Val, she kills Werner. And her report is, head nurse to surgeon, operation over, patient sedated. You know, just casual TV killing. And then clever line that's going to make you laugh a little
bit. I just don't know how Nick is ever going to find where Hydra's hiding, because it's not much to go with, but it's all we got.
Yeah. Oh, when he pulls out his eye and he says, if thine eye offend thee, pluck it out. This movie is so bad, but so right in so many ways.
So Nick, after he uses his LMD and his eye bomb, does get to the living room with the frozen daddy.
Gets back to Viper, yeah.
And they have their fight. Their big battle.
Where first it's a life model decoy that comes in, and this is where he makes the joke about her having her popsicle, because that's her dad, right? Yep. Get it? And he actually has to explain the joke to her. And then he says, you know, that's the problem with the Third Reich. No sense of humor. And so...
But they just weren't funny.
But Capsicle, you know, it's not original. We had it here first with Popsicle.
Oh.
Yeah.
I need a moment.
So he fights her, and she actually holds her own very well. And this is where she was on Mortal Kombat, and so apparently she does have some real martial arts training, because she had some pretty good moves there. She was able to kick him in the back and then swing her leg over and kick him in the front. But eventually, of course, they win. And now we've got one last problem.
Well, wait, we have to reference the fact that during the attack, he does say to her, I'll dance on your poisonous father's grave. I'll dance on your grave too, sweetness.
I'm sorry. And there's... And, you know, let's go ahead. There are some cliches happening here. Like when he finally gets to talk to Val again, to Contessa. And she says, Nick, thank God, I thought you were dead. I was, but I got better. What they have to do is they have to put in the sequence, the code sequence, to stop the missiles from firing. That's already been started. It's going to fire. They're too late. All right. So this is where you bring in, you've got Kate Neville. She's going to pull the information out. This is where it gets so ridiculous. It's a number code that they have to put in, and they're pulling it from Viper's brain, and they get the first four digits. Then they get the fifth digit is six. And then she stops. No,
but wait,
no, it's not six. It's nine, because the picture in her mind or something was flipped. I don't know.
Maybe Viper's fighting her.
Maybe. And so then they say, no, it's nine. Type in nine, Val. And it gets so ridiculous here, because at this point, it's kind of all anticlimax. They've had the huge battle, and now they're just like fighting over numbers, right? Is it nine or is it six? And Kate Neville believes it is nine. No, it's six. And they put it on Fury. Which is it, Nick? Nine or six? And he says six, but then he looks at Viper. And she just cannot. She's the woman you want to play poker with. She has no poker face. Because she lets it slip with her expression. No, nine. It's nine. It's nine. Or maybe it's the other way around. Six. Whatever. But it's just this flipped number. This is what they hinge the whole final thing on. The flipped number in her brain. Of course, they win. And Fury says, score one for the free world.
But even in victory.
Oh, they another countdown starts. They chain up Viper. Another countdown starts. They have no idea what the countdown is for. They're going to pull out her her blood so he can get cured. And she says, is it her who says to him, I'll see you in hell for this? And he says, we'll do lunch. But, so then we...
No. See, my favorite was somebody yells out, and I don't know if it was Pierce or Neville, but it was something like, she's halfway to China by now.
Oh,
and I'm like looking around. I'm like, really? It's been like 2 seconds.
Okay, wait. We got to talk about that. Okay. Because that's what the countdown is for, is the ice-filled coffin elevator. Apparently, this coffin that's standing up in the middle of her living room area, science lab living room, is not just a cooling unit. It's an elevator. It's a pneumatic tube kind of thing, I guess, or something. I don't know. That's what the countdown is for. They're figuring out what's going on with the countdown on the computers, and she gets out of the chain or out of the handcuffs. She puts herself in to the ice-filled coffin elevator with her dad,
which looks really, really creepy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's like, you like dad way too much.
She goes inside, and it's very, very cramped or whatever. It slowly starts to lower. Slowly, slowly, slowly. They look over, and there's the ice-filled elevator coffin going down slowly, and they run over. They can't stop it. They can't stop it. And that's where it disappears, and he looks down. It's gone for, like you said, 2 seconds. He looks down, and it's halfway to China now.
It's like, thanks for not trying.
Well, think about this for a second, though. As slow as it was going down, it had to take some time to pick up some speed. This is a tunnel. It's not like she's in a transporter and it beamed her away and they have no way of following it, okay, unless it's Star Trek Into Darkness.
And this, hopefully she'd want to get out soon because it's kind of creepy because when you're there with
and
your
cold.
Dad.
And cold. She's against an ice block with her father stuck inside. All they have to do is follow her down through the tunnel. The tunnel is going to go where she's going. Maybe there'll be, you know, some branches in the road here and there, but it's not. This is not the lost cause that they seem to make us want to think it is. If it was a rocket blasting off and had stealth technology, okay, I'll accept that.
But I was willing to accept that because in an ideal world, in episode 3, since this would have been episodes 1 and 2, in episode 3 we could have followed that tunnel.
But they don't. They don't even think about it. She's gone. She's halfway to China. What? That means she's in the Earth's core?
I'm Nick Fury. I don't try hard.
Oh, man. And that's where we also get this line. I can't remember the context. I just wrote it down because it struck me. Close only counts in horseshoes, Nick Fury says. I think they're talking about how they were close. And he says, close only counts in horseshoes. The first time I ever heard that phrase, close only counts in horseshoes and hand grenades, was in an episode of Knight Rider said by David Hasselhoff. What do you think about that, Jack?
That is full circle.
It is. Knight Rider being a classic show, but also a formative show for any comic book action-loving child growing up in the 80s.
So here's how this movie ends. This movie would have definitely been perfect for something to come next.
Mm-hmm.
Because we had the Val and Nick relationship mm-hmm. set up. We have the Pinsir versus Nick relationship ready to explode.
Yeah. Literally,
when the robot
bursts into flames.
We have the return of Hydra.
Yep. And the continuation of Hydra. Because
the continuation of Hydra.
The Ming the Merciless style of escape there at the very end.
And with Hydra, we've got Viper because she's escaped. But could anyone else fill that leadership with Werner being captured or killed or whatever Werner is?
Well, we now have Von Strucker. He's unfrozen. He's alive.
He's not dead.
And he comes to talk to her. And this is the creepiest of creepy scenes. This final scene with Viper and her father. as he's talking to her, she's looking over. He's standing behind her. It's a close two shot since it's television. And she's looking back over her shoulder at him and caressing his cheek with her fake long fingernails and smiling. And then he moves to the other side and the camera shifts over and she moves and turns her head to the other side. It looks like they're going to start making out. This is grossness.
This was Fox. Fox in 2008, man.
Fox would have gone there. Fox in 1998, you mean?
Yeah, in 98. They would have done it. They would have done it in 98. It's Fox.
It was creepy. I mean, I was loving the crazy up until that point, and I'm just like, okay, we just took the crazy. We turned it up to 11. I do not like 11.
You want to hear a hot mess of crazy?
Sure.
I have in my notes, Nick Fury to quit smoking.
Yeah. Well, he has good reason for it. I mean, he just had this real close call with death, a long lingering death. And then for him, I'm going to quit smoking because so many people want me dead. I'm not going to help him out with it. I'm okay with that. I just am surprised that they had him smoking the entire movie.
In the series that should have followed, we could have addressed that.
Oh, there definitely would have been some humorous moments of him, you know, going through it and not, you know, I don't want to smoke anymore. And
maybe punching a guy with a cigarette.
Looks like I picked the wrong day to stop smoking. I could see that line coming out.
An entire episode about the nicotine patch.
The Nick Furiotine patch. Yeah.
Nick Fury. Gabe here. I've developed a small patch that you can put on your arm. It's going to continue to make you grumpy and give you the proper amount of nicotine to get you through your day.
It's going to allow you to continue being grumpy. We just don't want you to be any grumpier.
Wait, no. Actually, Nick, the Nick Otine patch will allow you to continue to scowl even though you don't have a cigar in your mouth.
Yeah. Thanks, Gabe. Yeah. He's jump, chomp, chomp. What do I chew on? You'd be like Kojak. Always be chewing on suckers or something.
So did we do it?
I think we're just about there. Yeah, all things considered, I have to say, Daniel, it's cheese. It's not great. It's fun. And it's exactly the movie they were trying to make, I think. And I got to give them credit because they pull in characters in a way that Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. has not done.
No. And when you say they did exactly what they were intending to do, I really do. I felt like they sat down and they decided to write a sitcom in the style of The Tick with all this great and funny dialogue. And, you know, that's what they put together, a great, funny sitcom that would have been great in 30-minute increments.
Daniel, I think I need to talk to you about something here.
Yeah.
This was not a sitcom. This was serious. This was straight, man.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, this is drama. This is action-adventure drama.
But that's not what these lines indicate.
Oh, no. My friend, did you not watch Baywatch Nights?
No.
Okay, well, that's what they're going for here. Baywatch Nights.
This is completely changing my view of some of those lines.
This is 1990s Knight Rider. This is how we do Knight Rider in the 90s.
So it wasn't supposed to be funny when they said she's halfway to China by now.
Oh, no. No. That was real.
Oh. Yeah. We may have to re-record this.
There are some things that were, definitely meant to be funny, but that was not one of them. That was just crazy. That was just ridiculous. Yeah. Sorry.
Oh. Well, this is certainly revealing.
Sorry, man. Not a sitcom.
Oh.
Not a sitcom.
I guess Agent Coulson.
Doesn't.
Guess he's overachieving then. Good job, Agent Coulson. Good job.
So, yeah. I'll give them credit for using characters, for actually writing plots around the characters, using everyone on the screen that's part of the team, but this being a one-shot. That's part of why. But yeah, and it's cliched. I mean, at the end, you have Nick Fury say to Pierce, you know, Pierce, there's hope for you yet. I mean, come on. You don't write that into an actual screenplay. unless it's like 1930 where no one's done it before.
Or unless you're David Goyer and you're going to save all your good stuff for a decade later.
You mean
one of the writers of?
I love that they went with that. It's right there. The only thing worse than one of the writers of is if you were to say from one of the producers of. You know, one of the writers of, at least there's, yeah, that is someone who is sitting in the writer's room for that better thing that they're trying to be.
You know what I didn't see for Man of Steel on any of the previews?
What?
From the writer of the Legion of S.H.I.E.L.D. Comes Man of Steel.
No, he didn't.
Oh.
Okay, so, you know.
Merry Christmas, Ben. Merry Christmas, level 7 listeners.
Yeah. You know, it's great. I started watching this when I had it playing in the background, rather. I wasn't actually watching it, but I had it playing in the background while we started talking. We're at 2 minutes left on the show. So we actually recorded something unless we continue for too long. We actually recorded something that's shorter than the length that we're talking about.
It's a record.
I mean, we spent 2.5 hours on something that doesn't exist. And, yeah. We actually, yeah, I think we need to cut ties while we're ahead here. Okay.
Okay.
Because once we put in music and stuff, I'm not sure where this is going to fall as far as our episode length. But
jeez.
All things considered, if you can find a cheap way to watch this, ladies and gentlemen.
And good luck.
Do it.
Good luck at finding
it. Do it. If you can't, I'm not going to, it's not worth the money that's going for. It was worth the money to me and to Daniel because we both got to watch it and we got to talk about it and share it with you.
But it's also one of those things if you're watching like on an Amazon wish list or something, I mean, it'll fluctuate, but
never.
When you got it, it was one of the lowest fluctuations I'd ever seen.
So. Well, when I got it on eBay anyway. And I was the only person who bid on it, and it was actually brand new in the package, and Best Buy exclusive sticker on it. Yeah, okay, so there's Nick Fury and Contessa, and they're hugging on the deck of the helicarrier. Okay, now we're going to move over to Viper and her dad. Oh, she's going to kiss him.
Don't look.
She's going to kiss
look
him.
Away.
She's look fluttering away, her man. Eyelids. Oh, my goodness. Oh, this is... Okay, crazy went up to 11.
All right.
Daniel, all that said, do you have any final words for our listeners?
Don't you dare cut me off, you comic book coward.
Thank you for listening to Welcome to Level 7. We'd love for you to join the conversation. You can leave us a voicemail at 1-77-55, the word level, and then the number 7. That's 1-775-553-8357. You can also like us on Facebook, facebook.com/welcometolevel7. 7 is spelled out. Follow us on Twitter, where we are level7pod. 7 is spelled out. Or email us directly, feedback@welcometolevel7.com. 7 is spelled out. Visit our website, welcometolevel7.com, for news, reviews, and links to our RSS feeds. Our theme music is The Light Fantastic by J.S. Earls, jserls.bandcamp.com. And again, thanks for listening.
Welcome to Level 7 is a proud member of the Noodle Mix Network. Find more of our award-winning and award-nominated podcasts to make you think, laugh, and succeed at noodle.mx. Learn how to podcast, get productive in your personal and professional life, theorize over TV shows like Once Upon a Time, Once Upon a Time in Wonderland, Under the Dome, and of course, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Laugh with our clean comedy, delve into science fiction and philosophy, learn critical thinking from movie reviews, and more at noodle.mx.